organisations in that you talked about the difficulty of producing the unexpected, and I was just wondering if the unexpected, you only recognise the unexpected in hindsight, which is what I often find. And then the other observation is I just really appreciate that you also show the work of other people, because you don't often get that acknowledgement and generosity in the artist's talks. Thank you. So my, well, I've got two, but I'll restrict myself to one. The question of art writing, or what that is, or what is an artist's writer, I'm really interested in too. I was talking to Laura Eggleton, who is the editor at Impact 8, and she was saying that she's aware that a lot of the residency opportunities they offer, or the pieces they publish, follow the model of art writing as an extension of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, they're getting submissions from artists for speculative criticism. And I think I like your practice because it kind of refutes that polarity, that binariness. And I was just wondering if you could talk a bit more about that importance. So you talked about the hyphen, and I was thinking almost of a, like an ampersand, like a Gordian ampersand is a useful kind of thing for how all those, we even call ourselves artist writers, might, how you articulate the embeddedness of one with the other, which I think is a hard thing to do.
Wow, lots of things there. Thank you. I'll try and go through in a bit of order some of the things that you brought up. Firstly, this idea of the unexpected. Can you only recognise it in hindsight? I'm not sure, actually. I think you know it. I think it's possible to know it when you're making, actually. Or maybe I test it as a hypothesis and see what you think. If you're engaged in making, whether that's artist in the studio or a dancer or a writer, there's something when you encounter something that you know you've not done before. I mean, that's quite exciting. That's a moment, I think. When you're doing something and it kind of goes from the terrain of being familiar into something that surprises you or catches you by surprise in a way. It doesn't happen very often. I even think of it almost like the point at which the work asserts a sort of autonomy from you in a way. And I know this especially in terms of writing. Writing's horrible actually, because to a certain extent, it would be possible to assume that I could just say the things that I've written, and it's not the case at all. Can you just summarise that? And no, I can't actually, because it's emerged through a dialogue very much with the paper and over a long period of time. And sometimes it's a bit like it's outside of you, almost, and you're doing something and it's a bit more than what you think you know somehow. And I think you know that. They're kind of like little micro-epiphanies. Epiphany's probably a bit too big a word. Is that is an experience in practice, right? Yeah. So I think you can know it. I think you can also know it after the event of making work when you see it again. And I think this is true of exhibition or publication, when you suddenly realise something in the work that you've got no idea of at the time. And maybe it's taken a year or 10 years or whatever, and you see the thing that you couldn't even see when you were actually making it. And I think there's that kind of unexpected. In terms of collaboration, I think the unexpected is really interesting, or at least my experience of, especially the last collaboration that I mentioned, because it's probably taken us 3 years in order to genuinely embrace that sense of unexpectedness. Personally, the first year was horrendous, because I was so far out of my comfort zone that it was a year marked by resistance, probably, and anxiety. And if anything's going to be something not to give rise to the unexpected, it's resistance and anxiety. You know, it's the place where all of your walls get reaffirmed, if you like. So I think there's got to be something to do with being receptive to it. And actually, a lot of the writing in the book that I'm going to launch later, there's something to do with how do you practice that quality of attention to recognise the thing that's unexpected. Most of the time, we don't even see it. Most of the time, we're too busy or we're juggling too many things that we can't even recognise those gems that are in our own practices, because we're just checking our email or doing something else. They kind of need time in a way. So there's something about, yeah, time, openness, vulnerability, receptivity, all of which is bound up with that. And reflection. I mean, I think one of the things that's been interesting about teaching is I'm always shocked, actually, by how little students sit with their own work. It's all in this kind of, you know, forward arrow trajectory. What's next? You know, and never, or very rarely, that's too general, often, they're not actually sitting with it and seeing what it's doing and seeing what it's saying and seeing what actually is there. And I think that's a missed opportunity, in a way. That's point one. Art writing, embeddedness. I'm not sure what to say about that, really. I mean, I guess in practice, to a certain extent, has grown in quite an intuitive way. Over the last 10 years or so, there have been many art writing courses. Longer than that, I mean, one of my biggest regrets, I think, was that when I was a student, I did a fine art course, beginning at Falmouth, and over 20 years ago now, and then Exeter. And at the time, there was the fantastic Dartington course of performance writing. And it was so wide of where I was at the time that I don't think I even realised it existed. But there's a bit of a regret of, oh, what would it have been like had I done that course then? Who would I have met? What might have come from it, if you like? So, where am I going with this? I don't know. The hyphen, I think, comes from a product of originally having a fine art training. I think there's also something about the interloper that is associated with this hyphenation. I get quite nervous when I meet people from critical writing courses because they're proper and that they've been trained in writing. And there's something to do with not having been trained in something that I think is quite an interesting position to inhabit. That didn't answer you. Did that answer the question?
I think it's an ongoing question, isn't it? So for all of us. So thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah, okay.
There's lots that I would like to. So if I could maybe set up some questions and thoughts. So there's lots of questions, and they're not ones that you, like you say, they're not going to be fixed or answers, but there's something, there's this tension that runs through all your work, obviously, and contradiction as well, between opening things up and then closing it down and trying to be generative, but then capturing it, always capturing it, and how can, within this context, because I think words can, and are generative and can, and especially, you know, in poetic prose, but contingent on an art practice, is there something that then will always reduce that down, or is there something lost within that practice that I'm quite interested in, or is it, would it, you know, so there's something about that, but there is a tension, something about that. So I write into practice, and I know that there's something about writing I step away from in a part of practice because I want to be on that other register, you know. So I'm interested in how do you mediate, or is that attention that I'm putting on there? But there is something about that. There's something, and also whether your practice, the hyphenated art practice, can that exist outside of, does it need to be contingent on another art practice? So there's that. And also, so these are just kind of thoughts, my thoughts. And again, something more about this, we talked a lot about the different kind of words and text, and especially this is the video piece where different words are coming in and out of you. But because we're already working within an existing structure of what the vocabulary that's there, do you play with the vocabulary in that way? Do you make up new words? And is that something you've explored in your work as well, to sort of get beyond the kind of, like if it was in psychoanalytic terms, you'd be thinking about, you know, the very kind of phallic language that we have, and then there's the other ways of exploring practices. So that on the unstable, or struggling to try and capture what someone's doing or think, or something in their practice, is it because those words just don't exist and we need a new vocabulary for that?
Yeah, Okay. My goddess. in the choreographic figures project that I'm working on, we've got a really great guy who's working with us, Alex Arteaga, who's a philosopher, and he said something really interesting, which I think relates to the first bit that you're talking about, which is to do with this relationship between openness and closedness. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how in his earlier writing he'd always pitched contingency as the desirable condition and control as the control, the thing to be broken, if you like. But then as he'd been working, he'd started to describe it much more in terms of a Mobius strip. That I think the problem with language is that we're so caught up in binaries, actually. Mm-hmm. So we think of openness and closeness as opposites and not part of the same system. Not the same thing, even. I mean, I think, again, you know that in practice when... you know that in practice when if something is closing, something is also opening. It's not linear and it's not polar and it's not about opposites. It's about... the fact that closing is always in openness and vice versa. I mean, actually, I think that's something that the notion of the book, the yes of the no, is sort of edging towards in a way, that in no-ness there is already yes and vice versa. And I think we do get a bit caught up in this idea of poles and positions and one thing against the other. I think this tension between art and writing is one of those tension points in a way. And yet, I know a lot of artists who do write as part of their practice and write very eloquently and articulately. I think it's probably because we have an idea of something that isn't actually quite what it is. I am very contradictory, even a bit hypocritical actually, because I do advocate a lot of these things around openness, but at the same time, if you look at, I am reading a lot of what I'm saying, it is quite on the page, you know, and I think if you look at my writing, there is something to do with it has been even laboured over, do you know what I mean? It's not open in the sense of free writing. So maybe I'm interested in, yeah, what do we mean when we say something is open? Sometimes it's not always that it's unfinished in a free and open fashion. I think you can have openness within something that actually is quite tight and quite resolved. I mean, that actually is also what some of the best art does. When you encounter something that actually has an incredible level of precision and finishedness, and yet it's opening up into something that you just can't even see somehow. And that's amazing. Again, that doesn't happen very often. Yeah. I mean, I can probably count on a hand the number of times that's probably happened. But what an amazing thing. You know, what does that do when suddenly you think you're encountering something that's finished and it's just like gone like that in front of you? So maybe there's a bit of a call for, I don't think rethinking these terms, but actually paying them a bit more attention. Yeah, thinking about them. New words? I'm not sure. I think we've got a lot of words. I think the language is beautiful, actually. I mean, I think one of the things that I do enjoy, and I think also causes problems, is that one of the things that I really like about writing is it gives permission to use words that you probably wouldn't use in conversation, which is a bit opposite of what I'm interested in the conversation as material model. You know, there are so many incredible words, and yet we just use a fraction of them because of the day-to-day nature of how we use language. But the specificity of words, and again the etymology of words, is really dense and rich and exciting. And I don't know that we need any new ones, I just think we need to look at the ones we have more.
Hi, first of all, thank you. That's given me so much to think about. I wonder how artists think that are not knowing at the same time as I was reading The Cloud on Knowing, which is like an ancient mystical text.
Tell me again, what's the title?
It's called The Cloud of Unknowing.
The Cloud like of Unknowing?
Unknowing, yeah. It's like a medieval mystic text. And the fact that you've not heard of it answers my question. and this idea of all knowing mm-hmm. is really at the heart of it, and going into that mystery. And everything you've said this evening, if you could just shift it slightly, you could be talking about spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, do you see a relationship between what you're talking about in your practice and the kind of mysticism? I mean, you find it in, certainly in Buddhist mysticism, you find it in certain aspects of Christian spirituality as well. Mm-hmm. Do you see a relationship there, or do you want to distance yourself from that? And why, if on either side?
Yes and no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a proper yes and no answer to that. I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of the ideas that I am talking about resonate with spiritual practice in a whole variety of ways, actually. And I am interested in that, and yet I sometimes feel that there is a need to have some distance from it also. And I mean, that would be an interesting thing to unpack in itself, I think. And I think some of it is to do with the receptivity of the fields that you want to speak to, really. And using one language, do you disallow the possibility of talking in a different context, if you like? That's a bit vague, isn't it? My God, slippery. Again, if I go back to draw on this guy who really is, I think it's been such an interesting person to work with, Alex. He was talking a lot in our project about how, and I was talking about this on Saturday. Florence Peake had a great in conversation for the launch of her project at Side, and he was saying how aesthetics have a historical relationship to religion, but etymologically, in the sense of religion, comes from religare, which means, if I'm right, I'm paraphrasing him, religare is re, so like a redoing, and legare is bind or connection. So actually the etymological origin of religion is a reconnection. And he was saying that actually there are lots of philosophers, specifically within an activist tradition, which is part of phenomenology, that are really interested in this religare quality of aesthetics, this reconnective principle of aesthetics. And our process philosophers also, you know, this collapse of the distinctivenesses of, you know, self other, self world, self surrounds, etc. So where am I going with this? Yes, there is a spiritual dimension to it, and I think you can find that in lots of different places. More often than not, I suppose I'm drawing on certain kinds of philosophy, but reading philosophy as an artist, so in a bit of a pick and mix way. Perhaps I need to, you know, dig a bit deeper. But yeah, I think the spiritual thing is there for sure, and especially from Eastern traditions. Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, Anna. I wondered about what started off this project as a whole. And I wondered if you felt that there was a need to rethink the language in which we talk about being an artist. And then the second part of that question is it important to do this in the time we're living in now? Is that related to the triggers for this project? I'm really interested in the prompts of the questions. And I was looking at the first, the John Berger question, who is an artist? And I'm wondering about the continuing project which you've taken up to reflect on the language in which we talk about that.
Thank you. Yeah, well, this is an interesting one. What, how much to reveal?
Yeah, go on.
I can say something about the prompt. I mean, I think my work operates under this title called Not Yet There, and has done for some years, but only since 2007, something like that. I mean, maybe it's interesting to say that There are many artists who know that they're going to be, or writers that know that that's what they're going to do when they graduate, and they kind of do their undergraduate course and then they do whatever. They have their, you know, straight into it. And I wasn't like that at all. I think one of the things that was interesting was that on graduation, for a long time, you know, almost 10 years, I didn't really write and I didn't really make art. Although I was very much involved in working in the kind of cultural environment, working at site actually for a long time. And I can vividly remember the day when that changed, and it was really intense, and it sounds a bit stupid really. There was, for a while I was taking these photographs of balloons that were caught in trees. Well, no, not for a while. I saw a balloon in the tree and it did something that made me almost sick actually, where it kind of kindled a sense of something that I'd not felt for quite a long time, which was a desire to make something. That sounds really vague. I don't know how to say this. It was extremely powerful. It almost winded me. And it was that feeling of not making for a while and then being interested in something. So there was something starting with that notion there. I don't think I began by a desire to want to rethink something. I think that as a practice, it's developed really slowly and organically in a way. I think to begin with, I was beginning very much probably as a writer, and not really as a writer artist. Very much producing pieces of writing, very much about other people's work. And over the years, it's become much more fluid and much more to do with process and to do with this other dimension of practice. So I don't think it was to do with the feeling a need to do it as much as a need in myself, in the sense that that's what I'm interested in. But I do think there is a need. I mean, I think there's something also interesting in the last 10 years, I think specifically with the rise of artistic research, that there's a whole set of debates that are kind of connected to that, especially beyond Britain, which in all honesty is a bit bureaucratic, a bit too obsessed with either PhDs, the HRC or REF. You know, beyond all of that stuff, artistic research as an inquiry about knowledge and about artistic epistemology, I think is asking some questions about the process. I don't know where I'm going. This is kind of going a weird way. There is an urgency for it, I think, because there are forms of knowing and knowledge that we engage with when we're doing creative things. I don't just mean artists, I mean any in an expanded sense of being creative, that are marginalised and unacknowledged within Western culture at large, if you like. And for me, a lot of those knowledges are to do with a certain kind of questioning or curious sensibility. I mean, I would say it's to do with a capacity to, on the one hand, think about things as if or as what if. And I think they're critical values that I think we especially need in the current political climate. You know, it just feels as if the options of, in the big politics sense, with the big P, they're closing down faster and faster. And in a sense, the need for this kind of minor political, I think, is more and more urgent. I don't think it's the only alternative in some respects. I'm going into generalisation now. I think I'm getting to the tired point. It is needed, but I'm not quite sure how or why. Or do you think it's needed?
I think that the openness is really interesting in the context
when
things are being closed down.
Yeah. Yes, I think the principle of openness. Actually, tonight at the launch, there's a couple of fragments that I'm reading that are specifically about openness. And it's interesting that the language of it, although I'm talking about practice, actually sounds a lot like Brexit in a way of yeah, what's at stake by closing things down and defence in a way. A form of affirmation through process, I think, is important.
Something to do with the sort of space of the page. You talked about the paper page, and I really wanted to think about projection, because you work a lot with light, mm-hmm. you know, and text in a kind of projected way. And I just kind of thought about the materiality of that, and wondering if you could say something about the difference potentially between those two aspects of what you do. Because also you seem quite concerned at a number of times in the talk that you were being like too abstract in terms of the kind of concerns with material or anything.
And I'm just kind of sticking together in a really lumpy way the materiality of the page and the kind of the different kind of materiality that kind of lines.
Actually, one of the things that's been really interesting through this choreographic figures project was the pressure. There's a, not Mariella or Nicholas, but there's another collaborator in the project who kept trying to insist that I was sharing more about what it is to write. And there was a point in the project where I said, actually, my training is in photography. I think, actually, I'd not recognised how important that was. So when I talk about the page, actually, I think I'm talking about the frame. And in some ways, I'm not sure how, but I think in some ways my writerly approach is lens-based. And it is to do with an attitude in terms of what's excluded from the frame and close-up, and this idea of viewing something through a certain prism. There's a whole set of photographic metaphors, actually, that permeate all the way through my practice that actually I've not really realised. And I think there is something to do with that training in the way that you're encouraged to see through whatever medium that you work with. And for me, it's time-based, actually. More than the lens, it's time-based. So actually, I think when I talk about the page, in some ways, I talk about it in terms of its materiality, but actually, I think I'm actually talking about its temporality. The temporality of the frame rather than the materiality of the page. But it's taken a bit, I don't quite know, in a way. But there's definitely something to do with an edge that can be enabled. Again, it's this limit, I think, the edge that enables, because it actually focuses something in. Again, focusing, all of this is, it's lens-based language, really. The other bits, too abstract, I don't know, that's just apologetic, isn't it, really? Can there be too abstract?
Question. I kind of start thinking about something else now, but I was thinking about, you speak a lot about resistance in your work, and by talking about resistance, you're articulating freedoms and this real sense of freedom and poetic freedom. And I was thinking about by discussing this, you automatically conjure this sense of entrapment. And I was thinking around resistance. The history of resistance writing, with prisoners writing poetically as tactics of resistance, and I just a thought.
Wow, okay. I mean, I suppose not so much prisoners resistance writing, but I think one of the texts that's been a lasting influence, I think, was Michel de Certeau's Practices of Everyday Life. And in it, he talks about. He talks about the way that the indigenous Indians resisted the rules and legislation of the conquistadors, and he talks about it something like they resisted by performing them in a different key or to different ends. So at face value, it looks as if you're doing the thing that you're doing, but actually the undercurrent is that they're being performed in a totally different logic, and that's the kind of resistance that I'm really curious about. I think, you know, actually in academic life you need a bit of that, and I think in our current life I think more and more you need some of that. The danger of it is that it's clandestine, so whether it ever affects a big change I'm not sure, because it's sort of operating underneath the radar in a way. So to a certain extent it's letting things be but doing something under the cover. So I'm not sure about whether it's, I don't know, there's something troubling about it, because it almost lets things stay as they are, but you know, does something different. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, who's to say that making that change is possible through certain kinds of practice? I don't know where I'm going with that. Mm-hmm. I like that text. I think it offers a lot of really intriguing ways of thinking about doing things in a different kind of key.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.